Blog Talk Radio.
Technical difficulties this morning, but we got it solved, and that's the big thing. We got it solved. You know, that's an important thing for us to remember in life. is that sometimes when you have those moments where everything is going wrong, it just seems like everything is going wrong in your life. If you just hang in there while it's going crazy in your life, and allow yourself to breathe deeply and know, truly know and believe it will be all right. I use the roller coaster theory to reinforce that concept a lot. Now listen carefully to what Professor Applewhite has to say this morning about the roller coaster. On the roller coaster of life, people go up and people go down. Your emotions go up and your emotions go down. And what we're hoping is that you will hang in there long enough for your emotions to come right back on again and elevate your whole psychological and emotional and spiritual well-being. Because roller coasters are built for that. Roller coasters go up and roller coasters go down. Some of us don't even ride roller coasters, but we know that theory. So just remember that. And that's just what happened this morning. We've got a beautiful switchboard lighting up here. And we'll say good morning to a couple of people on there right now. Hi, good morning. This is Professor Applewhite. I'm talking to a 243 number. Good morning. And you've been waiting a while now, okay? Hello there. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Who is this? Who's calling in here? Is that our co-host calling in?
Yes.
You're co-hosting
Jennifer.
The show today. This is Jennifer Ramirez, everyone. And she is on the line this morning. For those of you who did hang up a little while ago while we were having those technical difficulties, please feel free to call back in again. We want to talk to you. We want to hear your story. You may have something that to say that might encourage another person to continue. Today, as you know, the show all the time is about students to teachers. And we're always talking about helping students and teachers communicate with each other. Communicate how and communicate about what? Communicate about what's bugging them. That's it. What's bugging them? What's bugging our teachers? What's bugging our students? Okay? And so today, we're talking about what's bugging our students in the form of labels or stereotypes that happen to us in life. Everyone has some kind of label or stereotype put on them early in life, usually even before school starts. And so with that, depending on who our parents are and our teachers are in life, we create or hold on to those labels as negative, and they stay in our subconscious and sometimes help mold us. No, not sometimes help mold us. They do mold us. And believe it or not, they come up from your subconscious when they are triggered in our environment. And that is why you find many times people returning to school after being away for so long, and they'll come back in and they'll say something like this: I've been away from school because I felt stupid. Because somewhere along the line, someone gave them that label of stupid, retarded. It's another common one. And we have, Jennifer, do you know any other common stereotypes that you've heard in the schools?
Yes, not smart enough, or too little, I'm too little for that, or the older kids can do it, but I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that appealing tone, because Jennifer works with on the elementary level, but she also works with teachers and parents, and we hear many times people coming back in their life, and as Nazim Rashid's book brings out, that reconnectedness with our childhood, we have a choice to let it be a damaging thing or let it be a constructive thing. And what we hope for on the Student to Teacher Show is that we talk about things that are constructive and that can help you not to hold on to those labels, those stereotypes, those issues of categorizing you. And when you're categorized like that, you know, no matter how old you are, no matter how mature you are, there can be some very serious consequences to that. You know, when we talk about defining things, it's very interesting. You can use the definition that comes with, say, Webster's Dictionary, or you can use your own subjective, your own personal definition. Like if I say student with disability, what's the first thing that comes into your mind? Or person with student with disability? A person with a disability. What comes into your mind personally? Do you see a wheelchair automatically? Or do you see another person? Because that's what we're hoping for, is that you see another person, not a wheelchair, not their disability, but their ability. Their ability to communicate with you at the same level as an equal human being. We advocate for that on the Student Teacher Show and through White Apple Institute. That's what we're all about, is overcoming anything, all the challenges that are presented with name-calling, with stereotyping, with labeling, and the things that you believe in your life about yourself. How do you get down to the bottom line and begin to start changing that? So many people have told me that they were going to listen to the show today and that they're either a student with a disability or they know someone who has a disability that's trying to go to school. And I hope that this show helps you, because we're going to cover some common myths that are out there about, you know, regarding the stereotypes about disability. You know, we have a wonderful producer, Malvina Sullivan, who's also online this morning. Good morning, Malvina. That's great. Great to hear your voice. And I don't know if your voice actually came through there, but she did say good morning to all you callers. And I am really, really pleased that Malvina is helping us this morning to keep the show going, technically speaking, okay? And I believe that a call was just dropped on the 216 area code, so please feel free to call back in, okay? Let's talk about some myths out there. You know, I've been a teacher for over 35 years, and one of the things that I've noticed throughout the years are those students that are damaged emotionally by the name-calling, by the stereotypes. They hold on to them. I've often wondered why, even though we know, or they may know practically, that they're not what they believe they're being called. For instance, a young lady that recently I was working with, one of my students, who has consistently been called retarded all of her life. And even though she knows, she says, I know I'm not retarded. But first I had to get into, what does retarded mean to you? And where does that, why is that a negative stereotype? And I'm going to talk about the factor that she came through, made a breakthrough just recently this week, and acknowledging that retardation just means that I think a little bit slower. And the positive end of that is thinking slower means that we think clearer. So you see how easy it is to take a concept and turn it around and make it a positive attribute. We can do that. It takes you wanting to change that around. We have students, a young man who came in recently who has ADHD, autism, Asperger's syndrome, and has gone on to college. And you talk about some name-calling and stereotyping as he was growing up. And what he learned how to do is to change his whole attitude about the way he looked at himself as someone who was weird. That was his word, weird, you're weird. And so what did that mean to him? So see, what I'm trying to say to you, my listeners out there, is that the first step in this labeling or stereotyping is getting into what you believe those concepts mean. So that's what you have to ask yourself first, is when I heard that word associated with myself, what did I think? Back to the student, Miss S, I'll call her, that said that she believed that she was retarded, and her defining what retardation means in her mind, and then changing that definition around so that it wouldn't be such a negative definition for her. But let's face it, we live in a society where we cannot change everyone. We cannot change the way people think. The majority of people that are out there have a very negative opinion about disability, or shall I say more of a lack of knowledge about it, which is ignorance. They don't understand where even the concept of someone with disability going to school and working and being independent, where does that come from? It's almost like you're talking to them and they're from another planet. But they're here. The movement has continued. The movement started years and years and years ago, helping people to recognize how important it is to look at a person with what we call a disability and regard them as equal human beings. I want to get into a little bit more on this concept of disability. Jennifer, bear with me for a minute on this, okay, and our listeners out there. See if this makes sense. When we talk about disability, we're talking about taking your ability that you have and dissing it. Somewhere, you know, and a lot of young people say, don't diss me. Well, dissing something means omitting it or eliminating it. So somewhere in our so-called abilities that we believe are abilities, something has been omitted or eliminated. And so what we want to do is make sure that when we're talking about disability even within ourselves, that we don't diss ourselves. Now, how do you not diss yourself? Well, number one, again, getting back into who you are and defining what you feel about yourself, especially if you're an adult learner and you have some unconscious, subconscious stuff back there about what you were called in school, in grade school. I'm going to go over some myths in just a moment, Jennifer, so hang in there. We've got another caller on the line that might have something to say from 216 area, actually. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. And are you calling in the student to teacher show?
Yes, yes, I am. I was
and you're calling in because you are a student and you are a teacher. Do you realize that?
Yes.
That's great. What's your name?
My name is Quest.
Quest. Okay, well, it's good to have you on the show this morning. And what we're talking about this morning is defining student with disability and making sure that we work within ourselves first. Any comments that you know about when you were going to school, did you hear of any labels that were attached to you?
Well, what I've noticed is, you know, I guess over the years I've noticed a huge change. I think when I was in school, I came out of, primary school or high school in 95. So when I came up, you know, I was in the middle of, they had stopped, they were doing, just not corporal punishment, where they were still paddling kids in school when I was.
Oh, yes. Schools are still doing that, believe it or not.
So, you know, they were paddling school. I mean, you know, I believe that, you know, that they probably should have kept doing it. It might have stopped a whole lot of things from happening. But just like over the – I thought about just like the whole ADHD piece where you have students that when I was a kid, you know, or you go back to where a lot of people were doing factory work and, you know, people were mailmen and everything was deliveries and drivers, and you had a lot of busy work where, you know, people worked in factories, so you had to be active. You know, no one cared about how active or how energized a child was because they were going to be in one of these fields where you would have to be a mover and a shaker. But now we've gone to this, in this day and age, where we've moved into this desktop industry where everyone is sitting at a desk and sitting in offices or sitting at a phone for, you know, hours on end. You have to, in order for you to be able to sit there, you need to be able to sit still. So now it's a problem that all these energetic kids.
Right. And,
know,
and in addition to that, is that whatever we dealt with as a child, whatever labels we dealt with as a child, seem to play a big part in how we interact with others in the workforce and how successful we are in the workforce. So all of that plays a very, very big part. I'm so glad that you brought that out, because that's really where we're going with this. It's about the serious consequences that are involved with labeling, stereotyping, with categorizing, and we do it, all of us do it. And I want to put in a special note here. I want to say that we do that as human beings to help us, because there's a lot of information that we filter in at one time. And so we do need to stereotype, or not stereotype in a negative way, but stereotype and categorize information. Don't you agree, Jennifer?
Absolutely.
But it doesn't mean that we have to go into, we have to do it in a negative way. And so when we talk about students with disabilities, we want to be very, very careful that we talk about it in a way of raising a level of consciousness that says you are positive, you can do things, you just have a different set of abilities. I'll tell you a common thing that happens a lot with college students is that we run into an issue with dyslexia a lot. Because dyslexia, especially in the time that you were in school, sir, our caller Quest, that you were in school, that we didn't use a lot of assessments at that time.
That it's funny that you
really
bring that up.
Yeah, we didn't use.
I had a cousin who was a year older than me. In the fourth grade, I caught him. In the fifth grade, you know, so, I mean, no, it was actually in the fifth grade, I caught up to him. I was a year under him. I was a year behind him. In the fifth grade, I caught up to him. And then in the sixth grade, I went past him. And they were still pushing students ahead at age limits. They were still passing you because of your age. You couldn't be a certain age in a certain grade, so they just passed you anyway. Well, you know, come to find out, it was later on that my cousin suffered from dyslexia.
Right.
And what it did to him was it made him act out in different ways, where he ended up becoming the bully and, you know, ended up running the streets and did a point where, you know, school became, you know, ended up on the back burner. And then, you know, you fast forward into his life, you know, when I was in college, you know, I mean, he had tried to turn it around and he ended up having children. And then him trying to turn that around, he really wanted to pursue learning to read because, you know, he had children then and his children were getting a little older and his children wanted him to help with this homework. And he was like, "Yo, daddy, help me with this." And, you know, children can be very cruel. And, you know, when the child presented him with the homework to help him, my cousin could not read it to point to help him. And, you know, he was stammering over it trying to read. And his own son teased him because he couldn't read. And it was actually...
That's an interesting story. Thank you for that. And I want to come back to that in just a second, because I want to just interject here. That when you say children can be cruel, you're so correct on that. But when I hear that statement, I always expand it into people can be cruel. Because as a society, we still had to have laws and regulations to even open up our minds about the word disability. We're still, many of us are still ready and willing to isolate people with disabilities and not regard them as equal players in the field of life. And so it's real important that we keep that in mind every time that we meet someone not whether or not they're in a wheelchair or not. Here's something I want you to think about. Not necessarily that they're in a wheelchair, but anyone you meet could have a disability. As a matter of fact, mind blower for you. I haven't met anybody without one. Now, what about that one?
I would agree with that.
Okay, I haven't met a person without some type of disability, something that holds them back from something that they want to do, some ability that they're not able to expound on. And I'm concerned about that. I'm going to pull in another caller, and I want you to I want to come back to you, Quest, and ask you what's happening to that young man today. Okay? One moment. Hi, this is Professor Applewhite. Thanks for calling in this morning. 309 area? 309. Good morning. Hello? Okay. Let's see. I think I lost you there. I'm so sorry. Please call back in. Okay. Well, back to you, Quest. All right? Okay. Okay, Quest, are you there? Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. There you are. Okay.
Okay.
I think I've got you. Mm-hmm.
I believe that, you know, I think that, you know, without, you know, like you were talking about the assessments, without having that, you know, a lot of times, you know, in certain communities, for predominantly black communities, we don't get the, I guess, you know, like the trickle down where, you know, the information, those things don't come to us in time where, you know, my aunt wasn't, you know, abreast of the knowledge to go get him treatment, to go, you know, to be able to force him into, you know, into a center or some type of, you know, like Elwin Seeds or some type of program where they actually would be able to help you when you have this type of disability.
Right.
And so what happened to my cousin was he just took it as, okay, I need to do something else. So he decided to just, you know, follow the streets and become, you know, like this, you know, this street savvy person. Like, I mean, you know, he might not be good with reading, but he could count, you know, so he could count money. And that was his claim to fame. I might not be able to read it, but I can count it, you know, and that was his claim to fame. And then, you know, pushing forward, now I have another cousin, you know, that in a sense was, you know, like almost like next generation. This is actually my cousin's nephew.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in a sense, he had some situations where, you know, he was actually, you know, was born with some deficiencies, you know, and, you know, due to, you know, his mother, you know, being on drugs and things like that, he had a lot of issues. But my aunt having a lot more knowledge now going the second time around, she went through the ringer. I mean, she did everything. I mean, every battery of test or examination or consultation piece that you could add, she went through. And she, you know, like it's amazing because it paid off. Because now this nephew, he's very high functioning.
Right, right.
In our society,
about
because
how old is
he is 14 now.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. So it makes
now
a great difference, and I think that's what Jennifer is going to share today too about the differences that can be made. She's very, very good in talking about attitudes and how we change attitudes. And you brought up some very, very good points for us, and I really, really appreciate that. And I want to make sure that I have time for the myths. So please stay online with us because I want to talk about some myths that go along with the way that we look at disability today. We have a special guest that will be joining us in just a moment. Her name is Patricia Edwards, and Patricia Edwards is coming to us from Arizona, the Arizona Bridge to Independent Living. She's been doing some work there, and she really has a tremendous wealth of information. She's a counselor, and she is willing to share. She's also a teacher, okay? So we'll have her on the line in just a moment. And we have another caller coming in from an 862 area. So hold on, Q. Don't give up on us, okay? So when we talk about Arizona Bridge to Independent Living, okay?
4807772502. Can't take your call now. You can leave a message after the tone. When you have finished, press the pound key or just hang up.
All right. We'll get back to her in just a moment. All right. Now, I want to go through some of the myths that are out there. Some of the myths that are out there right now that deal with disability. One I kind of alluded to a moment ago, and I talked about every time that we see someone in a wheelchair, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are disabled. It doesn't mean that they are chronically ill. And that is a common misperception. They're not necessarily chronically ill because they are in a wheelchair. A common thing that I hear myself as a person with a disability is that I'm supposedly more brave and courageous than others. And I want you to know that it takes a great deal of adaptation for anyone to overcome a disability, especially when you're dealing with mental and physical issues. So maybe the next time, the way that we could look at people, instead of assuming that they're so brave and courageous, and there's nothing wrong with those words, they're good, positive things. But we also want to balance that with the factor that we want to acknowledge that that person is adapting and constantly adapting in their life to different circumstances. Okay, so hold on the line for a moment, and I want to make sure, Malvina, are you there, our wonderful producer of the show, are you there this morning? Okay, one moment. I want to get you on the show because I bet you have some interesting things to say about how we're talking about people with disabilities. You've worked with me for quite a while now. Go ahead. I've got you now.
Well, I'm liking everything that I'm hearing, and I'm really pretty much in agreement with what everybody's saying.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. I'm trying to make sure that I'm not muting anybody out on the system here. We have an 862 number also that's calling in. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite.
Good morning, Professor.
Good morning. And your name?
My name is Maude.
Maude. Okay. Thank you, Maude, for calling in this morning. And you're calling in from 862 area. Where is that at?
That's Orange, New Jersey.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for being with us this morning. You know, we have a special part of this show where we talk about attitude.
Sorry, only.
And I want you to hang in there with us because we're going to come to that in just a moment also. So we've got some really, really good things coming up in the show in the next 15 minutes. I just want to take a moment to acknowledge our sponsors, which are White Apple Institute and also the Veterans Administration, Phoenix VA Hospital, that is helping us to start a new component of our show called Vet Vet, and that will be starting up September the 8th. And that will be veterans talking about the different issues that are going on with them, even it's related to disability and trying to go to school. Well, we are finishing up here, Quest, on some of the myths that are out there. And Jennifer is with me 100%. Feel free to jump in and say anything that you wish. But let me get through this list. That another issue that we deal with is that deaf people can read our lips, or that the blind have a sixth sense. Okay.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of these myths, you know, they come from because you know the world we're in this new world of with media. You know, like media shapes our reality. It defines our reality. Or they always say that art imitates life. And, you know, so many people are, you know, I mean, with the way that I guess, you know, sometimes it's like a gift and a curse about the freedoms that we have in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where, you know, people are this, what was that book, the whole Twilight series, the Twilight phenomenon, so where you had a whole group, subculture of children dressing and acting like vampires, because these things are sensationalized and they end up, you know, making them out to be more than they are. So then when you have, you see these different things and they make these movies about these, you know, these individuals who are, you know, have sight impairments, that, you know, they have this sixth sense, or they have this all their other senses are heightened to these extreme things where they end up being X-Men, and they have, you know, innate abilities that supersede everyone else. So, you know, some of these people, you know, sometimes it gets people in trouble. You know, even with the whole, you know, that whole tragedy that happened in Denver, I mean, in Colorado, where, you know, with that whole situation where, you know, the point now you got copycats, the individuals, oh, well, in case it doesn't happen to me, I'm going to take a whole bunch of guns. There was a guy in Ohio just got in trouble because he had a book bag full of guns and knives in the movie theater. And so it's these things that the media sensationalize these things, and they cause us to believe that, you know, we see it on television, so we think that it's possible.
And you know what else they sensationalize also when we're talking about, you know, students with disabilities, is that they went back, just in the student, the person that did the shooting in Aurora, and they went back to, I believe, the University of Colorado, and linked in that he had seen a counselor there. And the link to schools and students with disabilities is becoming so prevalent now. And we definitely need to stop that stereotype, because we have students that go to school, go to college and go to elementary school, from elementary school to college. Isn't that right, Jennifer? With all types of disabilities. And with that comes a great deal of academic achievement and physical bravery, just all kinds of accolades that I can think of. And it doesn't mean, just because they have especially a mental health disorder, that they are going to be one who's going to pick up a rifle and go and shoot. But what's happening with that media sensationalism is that they're breeding more into people believing that this mental health issue is, if a student has mental health, then that's a possibility. You agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That has got to stop. Any further comment on that?
Thinking about what you just said about individuals with disabilities, you know, excelling at school. When I was a freshman in college, I had an autistic math teacher. And, you know, it was amazing to me because, you know what I'm saying? I mean, when it came to the social piece, when him socializing, he wasn't that social and vocal. You know, I mean, he spoke to you, he remembered your name, but it was, you know, the conversation was, you know, that you would have of a high-functioning autistic person. But when it came to him teaching the class, it was, you know, there was nothing he didn't know. And, you know, so I did pretty well in the class, you know, from an autistic teacher. And so, you know, like coming to find out, you know, it's, you know, everyone, you know, I guess you have to meet people where they are. Everyone has gifts. And everyone has, you know, deficiencies.
You do have to meet people exactly where they are. And that's one of the problems that we have in our society overall, is that we're not meeting people where they are. We're not able to accept other people as equal human beings. Our egos get in the way. And especially if we're walking and talking in a certain manner that makes us athletically astute. Like, I felt that when I was watching the Olympics, all the great-looking bodies and the great projection of wealth and health. And I just couldn't get over the fact that that's not all that a human being is. A human being is so much more. And there's that very, very beautiful spiritual side that we tend to miss, especially when we talk about people with disabilities. I have something that I say to a person that is living under that category or under that disability, is not only to stop dissing yourself, but start dissing yourself in the sense of disciplining yourself, disciplining your thought process so that you can be stronger and make the right choices about what you feed your brain, what thoughts you feed in. So that's very, very important to us, what your input should be. What do you want people to see you as and project that out there? That's very important. Jennifer, you have any comments on that?
I think that when you were talking about myths, but I thought that was very fun to listen to. I was thinking of when my son, who does have ADHD, when he was initially diagnosed with it, the person that we had telling us stated that we needed to tell him right away so that he could know what that was, so that he could be clear on what the label was. And my feelings on it were differently because that label was the thing that would hold him down like a bag of bricks if he felt that it was negative or derogatory, more so than anything else anyone could do towards him. So what we were able to do for him was I was able to look up and find a lot of other people that that do actually choose to use the label of these ADHD, Asperger's, and continue on forward, putting their best selves forth. Like the Bruce, for example, he has ADHD. So that wasn't a negative. That meant that he had things about him that he...
Excuse me, Jennifer, could you move that phone away from the microphone away for just a moment? Because it's a little, we want to get every word that you're saying, and it sounded just a little muffled. Go ahead, please.
Is that better?
That's better, yes.
Okay. And then there's Steven Spielberg. He's got Asperger's. So he reminds me of the teacher that we were listening about, the math teacher, where obviously he didn't choose to live through the limiting label because almost nobody knows that. He chose to live through whatever his best skills are, which is probably planning and organization and being able to produce a movie in his creative side. So that label of whatever you associate with, the word or that belief system, that part that you throw yourself through or filter your life through, it could be the only thing that is the limit. And by choosing to look at other ways around it, too, as there being abilities, so many abilities within it, is the part that you can instead change. And that can come through having a significant, courageous experience, like asserting how it is that you feel in front of someone else. That's courageous and can change your belief system about who you might be limiting, who you might think you might be limiting yourself to. Or it can be through positive affirmations on a routine basis. If you,
positive affirmations, absolutely.
And that can change that belief system all the way deep into its core, such that whatever you perceive you're being perceived as no longer is something you see. So if I'm going through this day and I have a belief system that, I can be very weight conscious. So, if I'm perceiving that that's what's going on and practicing that that's going on, I'm going to see more and more and more of that. When I change my beliefs and change my thoughts on it, then after usually about, maybe 20 days or so, then I stop seeing it or perceiving it outward as like that.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Malvina, you've worked around a lot of people with disabilities, and one of the things that I hear you saying a lot, this is our producer of our show, Malvina Sullivan, tell us a little bit, I just want you to elaborate on how you say, you've said to me many times, you have to give a person the opportunity to be independent. You have to work with them and encourage them to do everything that they can before you step in. I think that's one of the things that I remember the most about the way you interact with people with disabilities.
Well, because it's more like you're an assistant to them, not taking care of them and hindering them and stopping them from doing the things that they could do on their own.
Now, you're a medical assistant, and you are also a caregiver. And so but that doesn't qualify you to say what you just said just now. You know what qualifies you to say what you just said just now? Is your belief system, your internal belief system, that if you yourself were on the other side of the desk or the bed, or you can reflect on the other person and say, how would I want to be treated?
Yeah, you have to have that empathy, and everybody doesn't have empathy. You can feel sympathy for somebody, but that's like you're just feeling sad for them. No, put yourself in that place, like, what if this was me? I would still want to be able to do the things that I can do on my own. And then if I can't, then I want to ask for that assistance.
Yes. And that takes us back to one of those myths that people with disabilities have to be taken care of. But if you look out in the world today, and I hope that most of you are seeing a really big change in that, you're seeing more people going to college with dyslexia, which is a reading disorder. Okay, there we go, that dis again, disorder,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And we see many, many people that are working and they are have disabilities. And mind you, that we have to really understand that most disabilities you cannot see. You cannot see those disabilities. And so when you can't see them, we automatically assume that, you know, they're not there. That this person is so-called normal, whatever that means. But I tend, like I said a minute ago when I had the gentleman on the phone, Quest, that when I look at a person, I automatically am going to equalize them with myself. And when you start doing that, then you have a great, the communication increases and we begin to learn something. We truly become the student and the teacher. Okay, we could become the student by learning more about that individual. And we become the teacher by sharing that information, sharing information about ourselves and with others about this, the categories and the stereotyping of people with disabilities. You know, there's one thing that that I hear a lot, another myth out there, is that when people are with smaller children and they see someone with a disability, it could be a white cane, somebody is blind, or the way that someone speaks. A lot of children with cerebral palsy, and they have a smaller child that's in the store with them, will say, "What's wrong with him, Daddy? What's wrong with her, Daddy?" Okay? And I had a student address that not too long ago, and they said, "Well, I'm really tired of the fact that people don't encourage your children to go ahead and ask the question. It's okay to ask. It doesn't make a person feel bad. As a matter of fact, it's a way of us reinforcing that we are students and teachers, is to ask the question so that we can understand more." Does that sound right to anybody out there?
Absolutely.
Yes, it does.
Absolutely, and don't freak out, because if your child says something, or if you're the parent of the child and you freak out, then that reaction is going to be worse than anything. You just relax and go with it, because otherwise...
Right.
That reaction is going to be that there is something wrong, and there isn't anything wrong.
Mm-hmm. It's nothing wrong with asking the questions. Asking the questions is how we learn. Like I've said to my students in the classroom for so many years, this stupid question is the one that's never asked. Have you ever heard that before?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have.
Yes. And I think I don't want to forget that caller I have coming in from New Jersey. Are you still there, caller? Are you still there, caller?
Yes, I am.
From New Jersey? Wonderful. Okay, I don't want to forget you. I wanted to ask you, do you understand what I was just saying just now about the empathy that you have and about equalizing and all those things that we've talked about?
Yes, I do.
Any comment that you'd like to have on that? Anything you'd like to bring up?
As far as the children, you know, and being with their parents and asking questions, when they see people that's disabled,
mm-hmm.
I think it's very good that they ask questions. Because like you said,
good.
If you don't ask questions, you can't learn anything.
That's right.
I mean, I have my two granddaughters, and they're always asking questions. You know?
It's one of the reasons I feel that we're so lost in our society is that we're not asking questions. We're not getting out there and getting to know a person with a disability, really opening up the door to empathize with them and to find out if we can help them, do you want to help, first off? And what do you need? And if someone says to you, I'm fine, then accept that. You know, encourage them to go to school. Encourage them to enter the workforce. Some people have said to me, why should I get out there? You know, I'm disabled, and why should I get out there and try to find a job? I get a check every month. I'm fine. Now, when they say that to me, they get a disability check every month, and they're fine, I leave it alone at that point. But when I get someone that says, you know what, I'm going to do what I can regardless of whatever disability I have, whether it's a reading disability, whether it's a mental health issue, whether, you know, the doctor says I'm bipolar and I have to take medication, whatever it is, I'm still going to roll up my sleeves and I'm going to keep going forward. Then I'm right there to help them. Do you know what else I find is a disability? Now, I'm going to open up. I'm going to really, really stimulate your mind right now on this one. A disability that I think of a lot is self-hatred. That's one of the greatest disabilities I hear out there, is self-hatred. So self-hatred because of the race that you're in. Self-hatred because of the words that you've, the names that you've been called from childhood. Changing that perception is going to be key to your success at school and at work. Help us here at the Student to Teacher Radio Show to advocate and encourage participation. Tell someone this week, tell them to listen to this show so that they can broaden their horizons, broaden their knowledge. And Jennifer, you have some tips for our teachers and parents out there this week. I don't want to forget you as our time begins to close in. You have some tips for our awesome attitude, from your awesome attitude series?
Well, going along with the show for today, I wanted to say that the most important thing to do is to accept the body, because it is the only thing you get to keep your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
All of its perfections and anything you think otherwise. I do have some tips for today with regards to communication. So, for communication, the most important thing is that you're committed to being 100% a listener and committed to being silent when you need to be silent. And the most important thing about communication that I'll be talking about today is the ability to hold back the need to incessantly talk.
Very big.
When we were children, we knew mothery. It was turn-taking. It's when babies learn to babble. Baby starts babbling, they become quiet, they wait for someone else to talk, then they know after that space has come, it is their space for them to babble and do whatever they can't do again. And as time progresses, when you get older, then we forget about turn-taking. So the ability to hold back the talking could be from a number of things. It could be because I'm scared to talk and have people listen to me. So I'm going to talk and talk and talk because this might be my only chance. And that is a sense of scarcity, that this space won't be there for me. Am I nervous? Is that why I'm incessantly talking? And asking myself if the body...
Okay, keep going. I'm so sorry.
What the body is saying, if you're feeling uncomfortable or anxious. The most important thing to do is, in your situation, just to check in with yourself and see what it is that there's excessive talking about, and then to tell yourself that it's okay to just relax when you need to and respect the spaces as they come.
Wonderful, wonderful. Great tips for this week. I believe that our special guest has just come online with us. Is Patricia Edwards there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful, wonderful. Patricia Edwards, as I mentioned earlier, is a counselor. She's a rehabilitation counselor, and she works within the school district here in Tempe, Arizona. And she also is with the Arizona Bridge to Independent Living. Welcome to the Student to Teacher Show.
Thank you, Denita.
Yes, you're welcome. Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to hear from you in the next few minutes, because we're getting ready to close, and unfortunately we had some technical difficulties starting off the show today. But I want to make sure that I get a gist, and we're going to have you back on the show again for a full interview. But I wanted to get the gist of why it's so important for you as a person with a disability to advocate and help others.
Because I'm a human being, and it takes a village to raise a child. Only those who have some comprehension are in a position to care about what's going on. It isn't that people don't care. It's that there are so many cares and concerns that it has to touch you in some way personally before your awareness is kicked in. So
awareness.
Awareness, sharing. People have a generous nature. I have a generous nature. And I've got a very good life, and I want to share it. And the people who understand kind of what the problems are the best ones to address to the people with the power, the legislatures.
Yes, yes. But
it's
very important
to vote.
While we were in the show, Patricia, just to interject a little bit with what you were just saying just now. Earlier in the show, a gentleman brought out the fact that children can be cruel, and I expanded it into the fact that people can be cruel. And the fact that now you're saying that people can be generous. I believe that there are people that are generous, and I believe there are people that are cruel, and I think that the cruelty comes from the lack of knowledge. Don't you believe that?
I believe that and the fact that they're hurting.
Mm-hmm.
I think cruelty comes basically from pain of some sort. So
mm-hmm.
I hurt, so all I know to do is lash out.
The pain from childhood, sometimes those triggers that we talked about earlier in the show, when you've had something happen to you in your childhood, words that were said to you, names that you were called, like weird, like stupid, like retarded, when you have those words stuck into your subconscious,
yeah,
and later
yeah.
on in life, as you mature, they come out. Have you ever experienced that or as a teacher or as yourself personally?
I've experienced it in both situations. I know my own story. I'm a quadriplegic,
mm-hmm.
but disability that is the most devastating is being a dyslexic and having
mm-hmm.
called myself stupid because I can't spell
mm-hmm.
most of my life.
Right. How did you turn that? Tell the listeners. We have about a couple of minutes left here. Tell the listeners, because that's one of the things that I talked about earlier, is that in order to change the way we look at ourselves with disability is to get in touch with how we're projecting out who we are, what we believe about ourselves.
Oh, that's
and I believe
definitely that's, true, Danita.
Yes. So is that how you started to come out of this this label that you put on yourself?
I working for ABLE, which is Arizona Bridge to Independent Living, with a supervisor who understands disability and fortunately for me, has a daughter with dyslexia, as I'm really good at the counseling part. I'm
mm-hmm.
really not very good at the things that require detail.
Mm-hmm.
But she was so kind and nobody assassinated me. And I think, even though it's a big word and it's probably not at all true, the feeling was that if I made a mistake, I was totally worthless. And therefore, I would be fired. And I never got fired. I made many, many mistakes. I did many things right, but when it came to the paperwork and the computer work, I made many mistakes, and she patiently, generously walked me through them until I learned
Patricia,
how to...
thank you. That is a wonderful story, and I hope that people take that into account. As we begin to close our show today, I want to wish all of you much love and peace through the week, and to take some of the things that we've talked about and look at yourself in the mirror and realize that there is no handicap. There is no dis of your ability. There is only the different abilities. You are differently abled. Bless you all. A little music from Wes Ricks brings us into close this week. Much love and peace from Professor Applewhite and the staff of White Apple Institute. And thank you, Malvina Sullivan, our producer, and co-host Jennifer Ramirez, and all of our guests who called in this morning.